You will know that I am putting in an official request to the powers that be, if I can put it that way, with respect to Wednesday, because this committee should, of course, have retained Wednesday as a full day. And I intend just doing a one-to-one with members of the ANC to persuade two of them to remain full-time in the committee so that we do the Wednesday. All right. You're already full-time, Honorable Mantash. All right. Having said that, I must say, it contrary to the radio reports on the weather, it's not raining. And that's not a good thing for Cape Town, is it? Those of us who spend some time here, it's very, very serious, given that Beaufort West is virtually under military delivery, you know, for water. And I think that it is something that all of us in our own homes should be cognizant of water. In this country, South Africa is internationally classified as a water-scarce country. And what it means is that the 13% we get, 13, 1-3, is spread over 30% of the country. That's very little, largely. So every time we have a committee meeting and you have a shower at home and this, I'm not sure why we're still having baths, but showers are the order of the day, and hand basins. Having said that and encouraged you, we then move to try and get an agenda adopted. And if we look at the agenda here, I'm first looking at the names. Have they been spelt right? Yes, indeed. Opening, welcome, adoption of the agenda, and apologies. Just before I get there, I want to put it on record again. It's a reminder to members, new and been here before, that when we're discussing and deliberating on a bill, it's critical that all parties send someone to represent their views, because you represent a constituency in our country. You know, you don't represent your jackets. Anyway, the adoption of the agenda, can we please have someone to propose that? Honorable Tiako, seconded by the Honorable Buyani. The apologies we have, we do yet again give our condolences to the Honorable Albert, who is only today burying his father-in-law. And there is something else. What is there? The apology we got from Miss the Honorable Plungwini, was it? No? Kachalia is on party business. Honorable Williams, as we know, is really quite ill and really regrets not being here yesterday. But where is Honorable Plungwini? Is she here and I just haven't seen her? Can you please check on that as well? All right. The update by the Department of Trade and Industry. Oh, by the way, Miss Influmbi Peter, we got your apology about the traffic. Yes, yes, there. And we're immediately going into an update by the Department of Trade and Industry on trade-related issues. Members, this is expected to be 50% of our mandate, and we're not spending enough time. Would you agree? And that will be part of why I'm requesting a full Wednesday. We can't go on like this. Right. So can we immediately hand over to yourself if you are you ready to run with it? Yes, thank you very much. Golewa Lombi Peter.
Yeah, Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My sincere apologies. I was stuck in traffic. In terms of the presentation, I will quickly outline the international context within which we are operating. I will also cover the SA policy context and trade policy and strategy. I will touch on the African regional economic integration and the development integration approach that South Africa is following with regards to integration with the rest of the continent. I will cover the trade agreements that we have with other African countries. I will cover the trade agreements with Europe, an update on AGOA, trade agreements with BRICS countries, as well as developments in the World Trade Organization. If I look at the international context, we see increasingly that there's a backlash against trade liberalization and globalization, and this is mainly because of lack of inclusive growth. And we have seen an increase in populism as well. In terms of the economic outlook for 2017, the IMF has indicated that we'll see 3.5% growth globally. Particularly there is stability in Europe, there is growth in India, but the risks still remain on the downside. In terms of the US, UK and Middle East, the growth forecasts have been revised downwards. There's also deceleration of growth in China, but in terms of Africa, the growth outlook has slightly improved. But when we look at it in per capita terms, it is not really positive. As a result of all of these developments, what we see is that there is increase in protectionism, especially in the developed world. It's not mainly as a result of tariffs, because due to the liberalization of tariffs under the WTO, tariffs on average are quite low, especially in developed countries. But the biggest challenge is in the non-tariff barriers. So we see an increase in a number of barriers that are used to restrict trade. We've also witnessed the unraveling of regional trade agreements. You'd be aware, Honourable Members, about Brexit, as well as the fact that the US has decided not to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Another important development is the fourth industrial revolution and the increasing importance of e-commerce in global trade, which presents, of course, opportunities for us, but also risks, because it requires, or the major developments when it comes to the fourth industrial revolution is automation. It will be the artificial intelligence, which will have serious implications for jobs. So what is going to be required is for South Africa to look at how we develop a fourth industrial revolution strategy so that we can have a digitalized industrial policy that will safeguard our interests but also advance our own development objectives. You'd be aware, Honourable Members, that there is a new chief directorate at the DTI which will look specifically on this issue. We also indicate that as a result of all of these developments, what it says to us as South Africa is that we need to prioritize the regional integration agenda in the continent, because our domestic market is quite small, but if we look at a market in terms of the whole continent, then we have a market of a significant size that will then propel our economy into sustainable development. Because the size of the market, when we look at the whole of the African continent, it's a market of 1.2 billion people. It's a market of $2 trillion US dollars in terms of GDP. Now, in terms of the SA policy context, our national development objectives are mainly to accelerate growth along a path that generates sustainable development as well as decent jobs. This strategy is elaborated in the National Development Plan as well as the new growth path. The National Industrial Policy Framework, as well as the various iterations of EPAP, are central components of advancing the strategy, and they seek to encourage and upgrade value-added, labor-absorbing industrial production. And trade policy becomes an important contributor to achieving those objectives. Now, if I come to the Trade Policy and Strategic Framework of South Africa, it was approved by Cabinet in 2012, and it still remains the essence of how we advance trade policy as a country. It is a policy that contributes to our economic development objectives as a country, and it emphasizes that trade policy and tariffs are instruments of industrial development. So they are critical instruments that we need to advance, to use to advance industrial development. And the aim, as I've indicated, the aim of the EPAPs as well as the National Industrial Policy Framework is to upgrade our industrial capacity, create employment, and increase value-added exports. So the trade policy becomes a critical instrument in advancing that agenda. We have, as a country, as outlined in the Trade Policy Strategy Framework, have indicated that we are adopting a strategic approach to tariff reform. So our approach is that we don't have an a priori approach to setting of tariffs. We look at an evidence-based case-by-case assessment, which will then inform changes in tariffs. So there's a vital role for the International Trade and Administration Commission, ITEC, because what happens is that the industry would approach ITEC and request whether it's an increase or a decrease in a tariff. ITEC will then undertake the necessary investigation, and that process is open to all the stakeholders who will then submit their own views in terms of the implications of what is proposed by industry, and on the basis of all of that information, ITEC will then make a recommendation to the minister. And that process is also informed by the sector strategies that are developed by the Industrial Development Division of the DTI. So it's a case-by-case assessment, and we'll look at the implications of a change in tariff to what is going to happen to achieving our objectives as set out in the sectoral strategy. But in broad terms, what we aim to do is to reduce tariffs on mature upstream input industries so that we lower the cost for the downstream labor-creating manufacturing. And then we raise tariffs on downstream industries with employment or value addition potential. And the aim of doing this is to ensure that we are able to create sustainable jobs in South Africa, but do this in a way that will still observe our international obligations and commitments that we have made under the different trade agreements that we are party to as a country. In terms of the trade priorities, the priority for us is to advance the regional integration agenda in the continent, and the aim is to promote African development, industrialization, and integration. And we do this through the development integration approach that combines market integration, which is about negotiating free trade agreements or broadening integration through the free trade agreements that we are now negotiating. The important ones are the tripartite free trade agreement between COMESA, EAC, and SADC, as well as the continental FTA negotiations. The second pillar of that strategy is industrialization. And the aim here is to develop regional value chains so that we promote industrialization throughout the continent. And the third pillar of the development integration agenda is infrastructure development to address inadequate infrastructure and to promote interconnectivity when it comes to infrastructure. And that is critical to ensure that we are able to facilitate the movement of goods and services across the continent. So those are the critical pillars through which we advance integration in the continent. And the rationale for that approach is that we need to shift the current patterns of economy in the continent in terms of a consumption commodities-driven growth path. Because what we currently have is that our economies remain vulnerable to changes in commodity prices because of heavy reliance on commodities. It has serious implications because in times of a boom, yes, we are able to make inroads and grow our economies, but in times where the prices are low, then we have serious challenges with regards to deficits. So the aim is to promote value addition in the continent. It is to ensure that we are able to move up the value chain by processing our own products that we have in the continent. Because currently we mainly exporters of primary products, but importers of value-added products, which is creating issues for continental economies. So we pursue this development integration agenda in all the regional economic communities that we are party to as a country. That includes the Southern Africa Customs Union, the Southern Africa Development Community, the Tripartite Free Trade Agreement, which is between COMESA, EAC, and SADC, as well as the Continental FTA, which we are negotiating as a continent.
Johnny?
Thanks, Chair. I don't know what happened with the presentation because it was reflecting and there's nothing. Okay, thanks.
Strange. I was just saying to someone the other day that we may want to be a paperless society, but we're forced sometimes to have a piece of paper in our hands. But I wonder, you know, I've got it here. When are they coming? I mean, what do you mean they knew it would happen? Why didn't she remain? Right. Okay, what we can do, if you don't mind, is we do have the actual copy. It's always better to have it over here, but can we proceed on that basis until it is done? Or MacPherson or not?
Okay, thanks, Chair. We also prioritize maintaining our trade and investment relations with industrialized economies because they are key markets for our exports, but also they are key markets in terms of being sources of investment into South Africa's productive sectors. We also work to build industrial complementarities and shift the structure of trade with dynamic economies of the South. So the aim is to promote South-South cooperation, and the BRICS formation is one of the critical arrangements through which we advance that agenda. We also prioritize ensuring that we work with the Africa Group and also like-minded countries to ensure that we get a development outcome in the WTO in terms of the Doha development round, and the focus has been the development of a post-Nairobi work program. But in the later slide, I will indicate what are the developments in preparation for the ministerial conference, the 11th ministerial conference that is taking place in Argentina in December this year. Now, if I come to the regional integration, I've already touched on the development integration agenda and the three pillars, so I won't really dwell on that much, but just to indicate that the three pillars that are the basis for the development integration agenda is market integration, which we achieve through the negotiations of the free trade agreements, or the implementation of the FTAs that we are currently party to, is to prioritize industrial development and the development of regional value chains and to promote infrastructure development. And that agenda is based on the fact that we've analyzed the reason why there is low intra-Africa trade, and it is mainly due to productive and supply side capacity constraints. So the three pillars are aimed at targeting exactly that and resolving those challenges. Now I'll come to the trade agreements that we have with other African countries. The first agreement is the Southern Africa Customs Union. It is a customs union that allows for free movement of goods across the customs union. And the critical agenda or priority at this stage is the review of the SACU agreement. Members would be aware that SACU is the oldest customs union in the world, and it was established in 1910. And so it's a colonial and apartheid arrangement that has been there for some time. So the agreement, the 1910 agreement, was reviewed in 1969, but the architecture was still left untouched. So after the democratic dispensation in South Africa in 1994, there was a view that the five member states must now renegotiate the agreement. So it was negotiated with the aim to democratize it, but also to ensure that we try and move it into an arrangement that supports the development of its member states. We've implemented the agreement since 2002, so it's almost 15 years since then. So what is the aim now is to look at reviewing the agreement so as to achieve a development integration agenda within SACU. The challenge that we have with SACU is that it's an arrangement that is held together by the common external tariff, which allows us to have a customs union, but also by the revenue sharing arrangement. Because what we have in SACU is that we collect the customs revenue as well as excise and put it into the common revenue pool, and then we divide the revenue that is in the common revenue pool according to a formula that is in the agreement. That agreement or the formula then means that the SACU countries, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland, get over 50% of the revenue, and South Africa gets 48% of the revenue, even though it is the major contributor. The aim of the review is to look at how we utilize the resources that we have in SACU to promote cross-border development. Currently, through the current formula, what happens is that the revenue is shared. What the countries do is up to them. It's a sovereign decision. So what it means is that over its long history, over 100 years, SACU does not have a cross-border project that it can show that we are a functional regional arrangement, because the formula doesn't allow for a financing mechanism for cross-border projects. So the aim of the review, as agreed by the member states when we had the summit in June this year, is to, one, identify public policy interventions to promote industrial development and the development of regional value chains, so that through that we can contribute to the sustainable development of all the members of SACU. The second issue is to look at how we can develop a suitable architecture for tariff setting to find an inclusive process that takes into account the interests of all the SACU member states. Another priority is to strengthen collaboration on trade facilitation so that we can improve border efficiencies and we're able to have a functional customs union. And it is also to identify other issues in the agreement that must be reviewed so as to strengthen how the customs union functions, and is to review the revenue sharing arrangement. And as I said, the aim is to find or establish a financing mechanism for cross-border projects, but also look at the establishment of the stabilization fund. So those are the key issues when it comes to SACCO. Honourable members would be aware that we have already defined a development integration agenda in SACCO, and that was done in 2010 when SACCO celebrated its centenary, because the view was that, yes, we are celebrating the centenary, but we need to transform SACCO from a colonial apartheid arrangement into a development arrangement that will contribute to the development of its member states. So the six-point plan that was agreed includes the review of the revenue sharing arrangement. It includes an appropriate architecture for tariff setting, the pillar on trade facilitation. Industrial development is the overarching theme of the SACCO web program. A unified engagement in trade negotiations with third parties, and lastly, to look at an approach to how we can advance trade in services, because the current arrangement is purely a trade in goods arrangement. The other arrangement or agreement that we have is with the Southern Africa Development Community countries. But it's only 13 of those members that are party to the SADC trade protocol, which establishes the free trade area. SADC is an important market for us. It's a market of over 277 million people. As I said, it's only 13 member states of SADC that are party to the trade protocol currently. Angola and the DRC are still to join, and these are critical markets and growing markets for South African products. So we do engage with the two countries bilaterally as well as through SADC to look at how we can collectively, as SADC member states, assist the two countries to join the trade protocol. We've also seen an expansion of SADC. Honourable members will be aware that in the last summit that was held in August this year, hosted by South Africa, the Comoros has joined SADC. We also have Burundi that is applying to join. So once the two members join, it will mean that we have an additional market which could be accessible to South Africa. Another important work program in SADC is the negotiation of on trade in services. We have already concluded at SADC the trade in services protocol, which was concluded in 2012. And out of that protocol, heads of states have prioritized six sectors that we can start to focus on in terms of liberalization. And the six sectors are transport, financial services, telecommunications, tourism, energy, and construction. Significant progress has been made, with four already having been concluded, and that's transport, financial, telecommunications, and tourism. So the negotiations on those four sectors has already been concluded, as I've said. We're currently busy finalizing negotiations on energy and construction services. And the aim is to conclude the negotiations on all of these sectors by March 2018. Another important program aligned to the development integration agenda is the regional industrialization strategy in SADC, which was adopted in 2014. South Africa is the current chair of SADC. Has an obligation to look at how we can drive the implementation of the regional industrialization strategy so that we can have tangible programs and projects out of the strategy. And as the current chair, we're working very closely with the SADC Secretariat. The Minister of Trade and Industry, Minister Rob Davis, was in Gaborone at the end of October to engage with the SADC Secretariat so that we can agree on how we can work together as the chair of SADC with the Secretariat towards the implementation of that strategy. The key issues for us would be to ensure that we have an operational plan similar to EPAP That will clarify what needs to be done, the policy interventions that need to be implemented regionally for us to be able to advance this agenda, but also the key priorities to identify potential value chains on the critical sectors that have been prioritized in SADC. We have prioritized three sectors: agro-processing, mineral beneficiation, as well as the pharmaceuticals. And these three sectors are also priority sectors for the continental agenda. So there's alignment between what we do regionally as well as what is being done at a continental level. Now I come to the tripartite free trade area. It's an arrangement that will combine markets of 26 countries in the continent, and it covers the east side of the continent from Cape to Egypt. It's a market of 625 million people, a combined GDP of $1.6 trillion. So it's a significant market that will put the continent on a sustainable development trajectory. We've agreed to pursue this agenda in terms of two phases, phase one being the trade in goods negotiation, and then the rest of the issues, trade in services, cooperation on IP, intellectual property rights, cooperation or an approach to investment, and cooperation on competition policy will all be negotiated under phase two. It is also based on the development integration model that we have been pursuing, and the key focus of this arrangement is to unlock industrial development through the development of regional value chains and to promote intra-Africa trade as well as intra-regional investment. We work very closely with Trade Invest Africa that was established last year by the Minister of Trade and Industry, because we're pursuing one strategy in the continent, which is the development integration agenda. But we need the investment-led approach to be able to achieve industrial development and infrastructure development. So the role of TIA becomes very critical in achieving the other pillars of the tripartite free trade area. In terms of where we are, honorable members will recall that South Africa signed the free trade agreement in July this year, because the legal framework that underpins the tripartite FTA has been concluded, so the agreement exists. We have concluded the necessary annexes to the agreement that will ensure that we have an agreement that can be implemented. We took time to sign because we wanted to make sure that we have a complete agreement. So now that that is achieved, we were able to sign the agreement. The minister signed in July 2017. In terms of the tariff negotiations, honorable members will recall that we agreed on the modalities that will be the basis upon which we liberalize tariffs. We said there will be 60% immediate liberalization, so 60% of the tariff lines in the tariff book will be liberalized immediately. Then 25% will be liberalized over a period of 5 to 8 years. And then 50% will be sensitivities that are subject to negotiations. So we have engaged with the tripartite member states on that basis. So the focus now is on finalizing the tariff negotiations. The key part is for us in the tripartite, because we already have an arrangement in SADC. And even though the arrangement includes SADC, COMESA, and the EAC, what has been agreed as the way of pursuing the tripartite free trade agreement negotiation was to adopt a pragmatic approach. One, we want to preserve what we already have in the regional economic communities in which we member. So we are preserving what we have in SADC. So the SADC protocol is not being renegotiated. we preserving it as is. So the negotiations for South Africa and SACU, because we negotiate as SACU as part of the customs union to protect the common external tariff. So the key negotiations for SACU will not be with the SADC countries, because already we have an arrangement through the trade protocol. The negotiations will be with non-SADC tripartite member states. So what it means for us is that the key negotiations are with the EAC, Egypt, Ethiopia, Djibouti, Eritrea, Sudan. So those are the main negotiating parties. So far, because for the negotiations to start, there has to be an exchange of offers. So SACU has already prepared offers for EAC, for Egypt, and the rest of the tripartite member states. But for the negotiations to happen, as I've said, you need to exchange offers. So far, the parties in the tripartite that have exchanged offers with us is the EAC and Egypt. The East African Community consists of Kenya, Tanzania, Rwanda, Uganda. So those are the countries that we are currently negotiating with. In terms of where we are, significant progress has been made with regards to the EAC. And in fact, we are very close to conclude the negotiations. Hopefully, we can conclude before the end of this year. We are going to have another round in November, so at the end of November, towards the conclusion of the negotiations. We have already agreed with the EAC on the 60% that will be liberalized upon entry into force. And there is agreement on the 25%. And what we've agreed is a shorter liberalization period because you'd recall the modalities. We're making provision for a 5 to 8 year phase down period. So we've agreed that we'll liberalize the 25% over 5 years on a reciprocal basis. And then we have the 14% that is subject to negotiation. And even on the 14% that is subject to negotiations, a lot of progress has been made, and we have been able to secure market access for products of export interest to South Africa. There are a few products that are still to be negotiated that will then lead us to the conclusion of the negotiation. As I said, honorable members, we really are looking forward to the conclusion of this agreement, and it is likely that we will conclude before the end of this year. We have also exchanged offers with Egypt, and the offers tabulate. They approached in accordance with the modalities. So far, we've had one round of negotiations with Egypt. With the EAC, we've had 12 rounds of negotiations, which is why that negotiation is more advanced than with Egypt. We are planning to then continue to negotiate with Egypt going into 2018 with a view to finalize the negotiations with Egypt also as soon as possible. Then in terms of the phase two issues, so that's the trade in services, cooperation on intellectual property, and approach to investment and competition policy, there is going to be a discussion in the tripartite, because even though these issues were prioritized in the tripartite, a lot of progress is being made under the continental FTA negotiations, which includes all of us. So there is an element of duplication if we continue with these issues under the tripartite, but it's a discussion that we need to have in the tripartite. There was supposed to have been a consultative meeting this month, but that meeting has not taken place, which will then give us a good sense on the approach to the phase two issues under the tripartite. Now, if I come to the continental FTA, the aim is to achieve the aspirations as set out in Agenda 2063 of the African Union. And the CFTA will also be built on the acquis that exists in each REC, so it will preserve what we already have in each rec. So the plan is not to unravel the trade arrangements that already exist at a regional level. All of them, as I said, are pursued on the basis of a development integration approach. In terms of the continental FTA negotiations, what has been prioritized under phase one is both trade in goods as well as trade in services, which is why I was saying if you look at the tripartite agenda, we would need to assess whether we still need to prioritize trade in services under the tripartite when we are already negotiating trade in services under the continental FTA agenda. A lot of progress has been made. Honorable members will recall that heads of states agreed that we negotiate the CFTA over 2 years. It was launched in 2015, and the deadline for conclusion is December 2017. I think a lot of people thought that was an unachievable ambition, but significant progress has been made because what has been used to establish the CFTA was to use the tripartite FTA as a basis. So it allowed us to make a lot of progress, so much so that we are likely to conclude, if not during the sitting now in November, we're likely to conclude the legal framework to establish the continental FTA in early 2018. So there's a lot of progress that has been made. With regards to the protocol on services, we've made significant progress. There is a protocol on goods. A lot of progress has been made, but we would have to negotiate the annexes that will then give effect to the provisions of the agreement. We'll have to negotiate those going forward, but the framework agreement that underpins the CFTA is almost concluded. If you look at the benefits of all of these arrangements to South Africa, one, it gives legal certainty and predictability in terms of the regional market. It encourages a rules-based trade regime. They all contain a dispute resolution mechanism, and the aim is to ensure that the dispute resolution mechanism is quite efficient. It allows us to broaden regional integration. It promotes the development of regional value chains. It facilitates the movement of goods and services in the region, and it promotes intra-regional investment. I'll now come to the agreements that we have in Europe. The first one being the Economic Partnership Agreement with the EU. In terms of this, the EU is the major trading partner for South Africa. It's the largest trading partner if we look at it as a bloc. But if we look at individual countries, China becomes the biggest trading partner as an individual country. So it's an important regional arrangement for South Africa. The EPA builds from the Trade Development Cooperation Agreement, which is the arrangement that we had, a bilateral agreement between South Africa and the EU. As a result of both the TDCA and now the EPA, we've seen growth in total trade between South Africa and the EU. The total trade in 2016 amounted to 588 billion rands. And our exports have also increased over the implementation period from 2000 up until 2016, from 64 billion to 250 billion. So we've managed to more than double our exports into the EU. We've also seen an increase in imports from the EU because a free trade agreement by its nature means that we open our market to the partner and they also open their market to our products. So it's reciprocal in nature. So as a result of that, the EU exports to South Africa have increased from 86 billion to 338 billion. The EPA was signed on the 10th of June 2016 and implemented on the 10th of October 2016. In terms of what the EPA means for us, because we already had a bilateral agreement with the EU. It meant that we have, and the main objective for South Africa was to improve market access, especially on agriculture, because under the TGCA, we got more market access for our industrial products and less for our agricultural products. So where the biggest opportunity was for us was to improve market access for agricultural products. So we've managed to do that, and we have managed to have additional market access for 32 agricultural products, and it includes new market access that we didn't have before under the TDCA on sugar. So we got 150,000 tons of sugar, and we had 80,000 tons for ethanol. We had improved market access for flour, some dairy products, fruit, and canned fruit, and also an improved quota for wine. Under the TDCA, we had 50 million liters that enjoyed duty-free access, and under the EPA, we now have 110 million liters. If you look at the market access, or the benefits, it's not only limited to market access, but it also relates to the textual provisions of the TDCA, because there were some constraints that we had under the TDCA in that we signed policy space away. So it was an opportunity to look at how we can claw back on that lost policy space under the EPA. The most important issues that I can highlight are improved rules of origin, in that we now have extended accumulation that allows for the development of regional value chains, and therefore it will promote industrialization across the region. We also have an opportunity, which is policy space we didn't have under the TDCA, to introduce export taxes, but on a specific number of lines or products, and under specific circumstances as specified in the agreement. Now, the standstill clause will not apply to products excluded from liberalization. What the standstill clause does is to say you can't increase any duties vis-a-vis the EU after you've signed the agreement. So that under the EPA, that was also applicable to products that were excluded from liberalization. So, which was an anomaly. So that was corrected under the EPA. We now also have a bilateral safeguard provision, an automatic special safeguard provision that is agreed on a list of products where you a threshold has been defined. So if imports reach that threshold, automatically we can impose an agricultural safeguard to protect our agricultural sector. Also, market access under clothing and textiles in terms of a single-stage transformation. It also allowed for or made provision for geographic indications, which is the protection of names. And the names that have been protected for the EU are in relation to wines, beers, spirits, and agricultural products. And for South Africa, it's wines, agricultural products, and the critical ones are rooibos, honeybush, and karoo, but karulem. But we can also protect 30 more agricultural names in future. Now I'll move to the implications of Brexit and what we are doing as a country, as well as the region, to try and safeguard our interests as a result of the Brexit. Honourable members would be aware that the UK is the second biggest trading partner for us in the EU after Germany, and it is the seventh biggest trading partner for South Africa. So it's a critical market for South Africa. And if you look at our exports to the EU, the UK is the third biggest market for us in terms of agricultural products, and 30% of all South Africa's fruit exports go to the UK, and 25% of all our wine exports go to the UK. So it's a critical market for South Africa. And also a critical market for our industrial products. We export a lot of vehicles, motor vehicles go to the UK. About 7 billion worth of vehicles go to the UK. So it's a critical market. So it became important for us to then say, after the announcement that the UK will be leaving the EU, there's a need for us to proactively engage the UK government so that we can look at an approach that will ensure that we will not have any interruption in trade between South Africa and the UK once the UK exits the EU. So there have been a number of engagements, both at officials level but also at a political level, towards a post-Brexit arrangement that will promote predictability and certainty in trade. Honourable members will be aware that because the UK is still a member of the EU, it cannot negotiate a trade arrangement, any new trade arrangement. But it has an understanding with the EU that it can roll over existing arrangements. So what it means is that we can negotiate a new arrangement, so we've been having a dialogue with the UK on what could be a post-Brexit arrangement that will safeguard our interests. So the agreement in principle is to use the EPA as the basis. It's a pragmatic approach, also taking into account their own constraints in not being able to negotiate a new arrangement. So it will preserve what we currently have and will roll over what we currently have. But even though it should be an easy exercise, there are technical issues that will need to be negotiated, such as the tariff rate quotas will need to be negotiated, because as South Africa, even though we are part of the SADC EPA group, South Africa was treated differently under the Economic Partnership Agreement, in that South Africa doesn't enjoy duty-free, quota-free access into the EU. We had products in which we had tariff rate quotas. So in those specific ones, we'll need to negotiate the volumes for the tariff rate quotas, and also we'll need to negotiate as SACU the trigger levels for the automatic agricultural safeguard. What we've advanced to both the UK and the EU is that when it comes to the negotiations of the TR2s, it can be that we look at 128 and say that will be the basis. Because when Croatia joined, we didn't get additional market access, and so when the UK leaves, we don't expect that we should reduce market access with regards or volumes with regards to the EU. We should keep it the same and negotiate a new volume with the UK. So that is what has been communicated to both. As I said, we've been meeting both at officials as well as ministerial level. There have been a number of engagements at ministerial level. We had Lord Price coming in July 2017, and we also had Dr. Fox coming in September 2017 to further engage with us on a post-Brexit arrangement. Following those meetings, we were mandated as senior officials to meet to now start the dialogue on a post-Brexit arrangement. We've had our first engagement in October 2017, where we identified in the agreement areas or provisions that can be rolled over, and those provisions that will need to be negotiated for us to have a post-Brexit arrangement. And I must say the discussion went very well, and I think we are in a good space to conclude the post-Brexit arrangement by March 2018. The aim is to conclude at that time so that we allow enough time for ratification processes so that by the time the UK leaves in March 2019, we can have an arrangement that can be implemented immediately and thereafter. The other arrangement that we have with the EU, with European countries, is EFTA, European Free Trade Association. It comprises of Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway, and Switzerland. We have a positive trade balance with the countries, which is in favor of South Africa. If I look at our total trade, it's around 28.6 billion. South Africa exports about 18 billion worth of products and imports around 10 billion. So we have a trade surplus. Even though we have a trade surplus, the challenge or concern for us is that we need to change the structure of trade because we still mainly export primary products while importing value-added products from them. And the agreement is due to be reviewed, so we've been engaging EFTA to review the agreement. Because it's with European countries, even the current arrangement that we have with EFTA was based on an arrangement that we have with the EU. So we're looking at areas where we need to align the agreement to ensure flow of goods and services within the European countries. We got duty-free, quota-free access for our industrial products. So the review for us will mainly focus on agricultural trade. I will now move to AGOA. South Africa and the U.S. enjoy very strong bilateral relations. The U.S., as a single country, is the second largest destination for our exports globally after China. We also have very good investment relations. The U.S. investments in South Africa around 2 trillion rand. And our own investment into the U.S. is about 867 billion. So we have very strong trade and investment relations. South Africa is home to over 800 U.S. companies. And the critical arrangement that has underpinned these strong relations is AGOA. Even though South Africa is one of those countries, very few countries in sub-Saharan Africa that is able to effectively use AGOA, our utilization rate is still quite low, which gives a sense that tariffs are not necessarily the main barrier to why we are not able to access the U.S. market. But there are other issues beyond, which mainly relate to our ability or the ability of our traders to meet the standards in the U.S. market. So that should be the issue that we try and look to if we are to improve the utilization rate. Currently, out of the 1,835 tariff lines, South Africa utilizes 141, so it's an 8% utilization rate. If you look at the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, it's 367 lines out of the 1,835, so it's a utilization rate of 20%. AGOA adds 1,835 lines beyond the lines that we enjoy under the GSP, which is 3,400 tariff lines. So if you look at the GSP, General Systems of Preferences, we're utilizing only 459 lines, which accounts for 14% of that, and the rest of sub-Saharan Africa in total, we utilize 819, which is 17% of the total lines. Even though AGOA has made a huge contribution in terms of changing the structure of our trade, we've been able to, under AGOA, increase our exports of value-added products, but our trade is still mainly commodities. I've covered most of this in terms of what AGOA is. There's sometimes a misunderstanding that it is a trade agreement. It's not a trade agreement. It's a preferential arrangement, unilateral preferential arrangement that is provided by the U.S. To sub-Saharan Africa with the aim of promoting sustainable development, create jobs, contribute to the broader economic development objectives of the sub-Saharan countries. So it gives an additional 1,835. In July 2016, there were new products that were added in AGOA, 27 travel and luggage goods that received duty-free treatment under the GSP and AGOA. So it's 11 lines that are leather and plastic products, and 16 lines is textile goods. So it gives new opportunities to be accessed. AGOA also offers preferential rules of origin for products for beneficiary countries, especially on clothing and textiles. But South Africa doesn't have access to that. It's the third country fabric, which means that any AGOA country can source from anywhere in the world, process the product, and still enjoy preferential access into the U.S. market. For us in South Africa, we don't have access to the third country fabric. For a country to continue to benefit under AGOA, there is an eligibility criteria that must be observed. The eligibility criteria requires that a country is a market-based economy. There's a rule of law and political pluralism. The elimination of barriers to U.S. trade and investment, and that was the clause that was used when South Africa had to go through a 30-day out-of-cycle review. The other important issue is the protection of intellectual property. We must combat corruption. You must have policies to reduce poverty, among others. So those are the key issues that the U.S. looks at as to whether, when it undertakes annual reviews or looks at the out-of-cycle reviews, those are the issues that are looked at to determine whether a country continues to benefit under AGOA. So the annual reviews have always been there. So it's nothing new. Since AGOA, the annual reviews have been there. So every year, the president will indicate to a country whether it will benefit under AGOA. What was new under the AGOA extension legislation was the introduction of the out-of-cycle reviews, which means that any interested party in the U.S. can petition the USTR, the United States Trade Representative, to review a country. And it will be on the basis of the criteria, as I've indicated. What is also new under the AGOA extension legislation is that in the past, once you found not to meet any of that criteria, the U.S. will terminate a country's participation. Now there's a level of flexibility that the U.S. can withdraw preferences in full, or it can suspend, or it can limit the benefits. So you can still continue, but there are specific lines where you may not be able to access. So at least it gives some flexibility rather than to say it's either you are in or you are out. I've already referred to the process with regards to the out-of-cycle review, but maybe just to say, honorable members, AGOA covers all sectors, with the exclusion of certain textiles and articles thereof. So your man-made staple fibers, special woven fabrics, knitted or crocheted fabrics. Other products also excluded in relation to the agro-processing sector, the ones that are specified there, peaches and peach juices, silicone, electrolytic manganese, metal powder. But other than those, we have access in terms of all the lines. In August, there was the 16th AGOA Forum in Togo. It gave us an opportunity to hear from the new administration what the view is in terms of its strategy for the continent, what the approach will be with regards to AGOA. I think the important issue that was emphasized is that we must note that AGOA is a temporary trade arrangement. It's a unilateral preferential arrangement. The U.S. over time has indicated that it is reviewing its approach to these preferential trade arrangements, and that the arrangement is here until 2025. So the countries were urged to utilize AGOA for the remaining period. the emphasis was put on enforcement, that the U.S. and the current administration will look at enforcing the criteria, and the instruments that are available to it will be utilized, whether it is annual reviews or the out-of-cycle reviews. And the aim for the U.S. is to ensure that they use or leverage the eligibility criteria to reduce, one, the trade deficit, although Ambassador Lighthizer has indicated that the sub-Saharan African countries are not mainly the target when it comes to its review of trade deficits. But, of course, if an issue is raised, they will, of course, look into the issue. And members will be aware that we do have a surplus with the U.S. Of $7.5 billion. So it's a small surplus, and we're not really a threat to the U.S. We are a small contributor in terms of even the percentage. We're less than 1% of total U.S. Imports globally. So we're not a serious threat when it comes to the trade deficit. But also the priority will be to pursue fair trade. And by fair trade, it relates to the issue of the trade deficit, that the U.S. trade must really be on par in imports and exports. So the issue of fair trade is what will be also prioritized. So when you look at this, our own assessment of what AGOA means to South Africa is that it has really been a mutually beneficial arrangement. There are very strong intra-industry linkages between South Africa and the U.S. as a result of AGOA. So while AGOA is creating jobs here in South Africa, it is also creating opportunities for importing from the U.S., especially in the auto sector, which means that we create jobs from both sides. So there are very strong intra-industry linkages. But also, AGOA has contributed to promoting regional integration in the continent, as well as the development of regional value chains, because Lesotho would export, for example, jeans to Gap, and in producing those jeans, they would import some of the products from South Africa and the rest of the continent. So in that way, the value chains have been enhanced as a result of AGOA, which is an important development. But of course, the U.S. administration is also quite keen to have a discussion with sub-Saharan African countries on a post-AGOA arrangement. We've had a number of discussions because the Obama administration issued a Beyond AGOA report, which gave a number of options that can be considered towards a reciprocal arrangement. At this stage, it is not clear whether that report is the basis for engagement with, in terms of the new administration, and it's something that we continuously engage on. I was in the U.S. Last week to discuss bilateral issues with the USTR. What they've indicated to us is that that report still remains, so we should still use it as a basis. So we will be looking at implications for that. So there will be engagements that will be ongoing on what it is that we can do to enhance trade and investment between South Africa and SACU by indications with the U.S. In terms of the BRICS countries' trade arrangements, we still negotiating a PTA. It's moving on a very slow track with India, but it's still a priority for SACU as a means of boosting South-South trade in a targeted manner. And it will be a limited arrangement. India is an important trading partner for South Africa. The main difficulties that have been identified by both South African stakeholders as well as SACU relates to concerns with regards to some non-tariff barriers in the Indian market, and the fact that India's request list is in South Africa's sensitive sectors such as clothing and textile. But what has been agreed is that we look at reduced level of ambition and reduced coverage in terms of tariff lines, and then use the preferential trade agreement as an incremental block towards an enhanced trade arrangement in future. We also have a trade arrangement with Mercosur. This has come into force in 2016, on the 1st of April 2016. So it's a new market that we have in South Africa, and we have been giving presentations to the export councils to take advantage of the new market access. It's a limited arrangement that covers over 1,000 tariff lines from both sides, and it offers preferential margins of preference of between 10 and 100%. Now move to the WTO. In terms of the WTO, we're now preparing for the 11th Ministerial Conference that is taking place in December in Argentina. If you look at where we are with regards to the WTO, there's a period of considerable uncertainty when it comes to multilateralism, trade liberalization because of the backlash against trade agreements that I referred to before, but also the challenge has been the messages that are also coming from one of the critical parties in the process, which is entailed in the U.S. trade policy statement, which was issued in March 2017, where the U.S. is indicating that the outcomes of the dispute settlement body will not be automatically implemented. They will have to go through Congress. Also, the key challenge, Honorable Chair, is the issue of the status or the implications for the Doha Development Agenda. In Nairobi, in MC10, what was clear from the ministerial declaration is that there was support by some on the implementation of the outstanding issues or conclusion of the outstanding issues under the Doha Development Agenda, while some felt that there must be consideration of new approaches, new issues to move the multilateral trading system forward. We have a concern with that, in that for us as a developing country, the outstanding issues and dealing with market distortions, especially on agriculture, is a critical issue that needs to be addressed, because as agriculture-based economies, it's important that we level the playing field and deal with the distortions that come as a result of subsidies in agriculture that distort global trade. So if those issues remain unaddressed, then it means that the critical issues that will assist the continent to fully integrate into the global economy are not addressed. And the continent accounts for only 3% of global trade. So, and it's because of the current or existing market distortions that we are not able to increase our contribution to global trade. So those issues are quite critical that they would need to be addressed. But we've also seen that, as I said, there's introduction of new issues such as e-commerce, investment facilitation that are being put on the agenda, while there are long outstanding issues, including the approach to cotton subsidies, which is of critical importance to the continent, that are still not addressed. If you look at the Africa position, which was adopted in November 2016, but also reaffirmed during the informal meeting on the 18th of September in Addis, is that the principle that informs our approach to the WTO is that the development objectives and the principles of the Doha Development Agenda, including the special and differential treatment and less than full reciprocity, remain important, and that a developmental package must remain at the core of any negotiation outcome. And for us, as I've said, the aim is to prioritize and conclude on all the unresolved issues in the Doha Development Agenda. I've already indicated that agriculture and the need to eliminate the trade distortions in domestic support that constrain Africa's full potential in agriculture remain very much important. One of the critical issues that was an outcome of the Bali ministerial in 2013 but also discussed in the Nairobi ministerial in 2015 was to look for a permanent solution for public stockholding. And the public stockholding are programs that are supported by especially the developing countries to promote food security. So it's important programs for developing countries. And this issue has been driven mainly by India because it has the biggest program. We don't have a program per se in South Africa, but we would not want to close policy space should we want to implement it in future. So the aim for us is to ensure that there is a permanent solution for public stockholding. But of course, we do also note that there are risks to the public stockholding programs and that they may distort agricultural trade. So there are conditions of safeguards that will have to be put in place to ensure that those programs and the products that are coming from those programs are for domestic consumption. On cotton, it's about eliminating all trade distorting policies affecting the sector. It's an important issue, especially for the cotton four countries that are in Africa. The other important issue is the issue of fishery subsidies. When it comes to fishery subsidies, this is an issue that comes out of the Sustainable Development Goal, Sustainable Development Goal 14.6. And in terms of that Sustainable Development Goal, there is commitment that has been made globally to conserve marine resources for sustainable development. And through SDG 14, countries have committed to prohibit all forms of fishery subsidies, which will contribute to overcapacity and overfishing, but also eliminate subsidies that contribute to illegal, unreported and unregulated fishing, and to refrain from introducing new subsidies by 2020. So that is a commitment that has already been made globally and agreed. So the negotiations in the WTO about looking at modalities and disciplines that must be introduced to achieve that sustainable development goal. In terms of our own position on this issue, is that while this is an important issue that must be addressed because we also produce fishery products and export globally, so the current subsidies that exist mainly in developed countries really distort and trade and also reduce our ability to take advantage of global markets when it comes to this. But it is important to ensure that the disciplines that are to be agreed in the WTO do not inhibit us from supporting small fishing communities. So we will ensure that we safeguard and preserve the policy space to be able to do so. But also, we should preserve the policy space to build our own capabilities in future when it comes to enhancing our fishing capabilities. Also critical is the issue of special and differential treatment. As you said, this is a key principle that underpins the Doha Development Agenda. So our view is that special and differential treatment should be an integral part of all WTO agreements and future multilateral outcomes, because we need to understand that the level playing field is not there, so the special and differential treatment principle then it is critical to ensure that the differences in capabilities, the differences in levels of development must be taken into account. And the fact that as a continent, the key priority for us is to change the structure of our economies by promoting industrial development. So we'll need policy space to be able to achieve that and also achieve the objectives that we set for ourselves in Agenda 2063. There's also discussions around domestic regulations on services, and mainly this focuses on issues related to transparency, but it's not only about sharing of information, but it's about also introducing new disciplines that will constrain our own policy space. So as we engage in that discussion, we need to ensure that whatever requirements are put in do not intrude into domestic policy making and its processes. The continent has the biggest number of LDCs globally, so we also prioritize the issues of importance to LDCs to ensure that they have flexibility in implementing the obligations that come from the multilateral trade agreement, but also flexibility when it comes to accessions for LDCs, so that they do not end up undertaking commitments that will inhibit their future development. When it comes to the trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, the discussion has been around, or the position is to look at amending the TRIPS agreement to ease access to affordable medicines, to introduce requirements for disclosure, which will then allow the patent examiners enough information to be able to make a determination whether a patent should be granted or not. Also, issues related to the importance of traditional knowledge systems, as well as the Convention on Biological Diversity, to ensure that there's alignment between the TRIPS Agreement and that specific convention. When it comes to trade facilitation agreement, and maybe I can give an update here, honorable members would be aware that we ratified the trade facilitation agreement. After ratification, we went to cabinet so that we can look at the commitments that we're going to make in terms of the categorization. So that has been done, and cabinet has approved that. We've submitted the instrument of ratification to our office in Geneva, and they have submitted it to the WTO. So it's a matter of time for the WTO to now also include us as one of those countries that have ratified the trade agreement. But the aim is to call for the expansion of its scope to include both soft and hard infrastructure projects to facilitate the full implementation of the agreement. Because the key issue for African countries is the capacity to implement, which was an issue that was raised during the negotiation process because of lack of infrastructure. Aid for trade remains an important issue for us. To ensure that there's trade-related capacity building, also support provided to African countries in terms of overcoming the supply side and productive capacity constraints. The need to focus on infrastructure development is a critical contributor to trade, and the need to facilitate the integration of developing countries in global trade. Last slide, Chair. The aim as we engage in or prepare to engage in MC level is to look at how we can engage with a view to preserve the multilateral trading system that supports development, continue to advocate for progress to be made on the outstanding Doha issues, and that any package that is agreed must have very strong developmental outcomes. In terms of the new issues, while we note the importance of those new issues, including e-commerce, because e-commerce is here and it is going to be the future of trade, what we are saying at this stage is that we can't agree to the development of multilateral rules on e-commerce at this stage, because we need to first fully understand the whole spectrum of e-commerce and fully understand the implications of e-commerce for our economy, but also at the same time look at areas of cooperation to address the digital divide. So we are of the view that the discussions must continue in Geneva, in the WTO, on e-commerce, with a view to look at the development aspects of e-commerce, so that as we look at e-commerce trade, it must support inclusive growth and development. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Members, some of you will appreciate that at the beginning of this year, we had 2 days engagement on trade. We haven't really done it extensively since then, and many new members have joined us along the way. So where we are now is essentially getting a long overdue, you know, update here. But it was our intention, and then the parliamentary program changed, to run one full day, almost like a workshop or seminar. We are going to factor that in next year. But meanwhile, regard this as an update and engage. What I would try and appeal the members avoid the prefacing so much and get into the heart of the questions, because I don't really want to cut you short and say you've got 2 minutes or 3 minutes. Let's try and do two quick rounds. Hands up, please. Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Briani, Honourable Mantash. Oh, sorry, Honourable Esterhazen, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mlambi Peters, for that extensive update. I want to focus in on three areas, the first being SACU. And I'm glad that there's a review of SACU taking place, because I actually think that South Africa is severely disadvantaged in how we on how the revenue is distributed, considering that we are the largest contributor to it. And you know, it's an odd situation that I don't understand why we are not more forthright in actually asserting what I think is probably a genuine unhappiness with what we've been bound to. So I just want to understand what the sort of the timelines for that review is. What is the position that we are pushing for ultimately? What is the ultimate goal for us to be locked into, and even is there even a discussion of whether SACU is still relevant, and whether we still want to be bound to that. The next question that I have regarding SADC, I think one of the big problems that I see in SADC, and I see it from a practical point, because in another incarnation, before I became a politician, I was heavily involved in the textile industry. And I know that one of the big issues that the textile industry in South Africa is battling with is point of origin products that are coming in from Mauritius, and that they are then able to export them to South Africa duty-free because of the SADC agreement. Now, I mean, if and I've raised this before, this is not a new issue that I've raised in this committee, but if one looks at the capacity of Mauritian mills to produce fabric and the total amounts of garments that are exported to South Africa, the amount of garments exceeds the capacity of Mauritian weaving mills. So that means that fabric is coming from somewhere else. It can only be coming from somewhere else. Yet it continues to be exported to South Africa duty-free because it is apparently made in Mauritius, the fabric, and it's not. I know it's not. So I think it's a critical point that we need to look at in SADC, and we need to understand how better we can refine that process. Because I think that we are being severely disadvantaged with products that are coming into South Africa from SADC countries that, in fact, do not qualify for duty-free status. And then, with regards to Brexit, how does the department view this process taking place? Because surely there's going to be a hiatus between when Brexit comes in and when we negotiate a new deal, let's say it is an EPA-type deal. What happens in that transition? And that's what concerns me, because I haven't heard any discussions from the DTI or from the minister or from Dr. Fox about what happens in that interim, because it's not going to be an overnight thing. I mean, it could be a year, 2 years before we have a new deal if that's when Britain is only prepared to start negotiating. How are we preparing ourselves for that hiatus? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Briani.
Thanks, Chair.
Thanks for the presentation. Welcome, sir. Mine is just wanted to check, man, the capacity of our trade negotiators and some trade deals that affect South Africa negatively. Reports indicate that some of our Chinese arrangement, they are bringing labor to South Africa for plant construction and so forth. So I just wanted to check as to what is the arrangement, because if you make a deal, we anticipate to have skills and development in that deal. Then if you bring along your labor and forces from where you are, I think it creates challenges to the country. Then secondly, I wanted to check did I proactively assess the need for tariffs and changes instead, or waiting for a company to indicate that or approach the ITAC? Then last one, I wanted to check the challenge of economic partnership agreement on the integration of Africa, because sometimes IPA impedes regional economic integration. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Biyani. Honorable Mantash.
Thank you, Chair. I think I find comfort in that the SACO agreement will be reconsidered or renegotiated, because as Honorable McPherson is saying, I think as a country we find ourselves in a disadvantaged position in that agreement. But I also have the following question, Chair, which I think I'm not going to take most of your time. They are a bit long. I wanted to know whether business is using the new market access opportunities for agricultural products. If not, what is the impediment? We have been for a number of years talking about development integration inside SADC. What is the progress? Because for me, if we could trade within ourselves as SADC, we would cushion our countries from being bullied by the EU, and our currencies would be protected, because currently we are vulnerable. What is the intention to improve appetite for an expanded utilization rate of the opportunities? Chairperson again. As a point of analysis, will Brexit offer opportunities or challenges to South Africa in a sense that we can negotiate new trade arrangements? What are possible challenges for SA due to Brexit? And AGOA, as it is a unilateral preferential trade agreement, what would be different if AGOA was to be a negotiated trade agreement? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mantash. Honorable Esterhazen.
Thank you, Chair. There's a very comprehensive report on our trade agreements. I was going to say the political decisions and matters like Brexit that have economic consequences globally does affect us and our economy. South Africa remains the UK's largest African trading partner. South Africa has signed the South African Development Community EU Economic Partnership Agreement. How far are we from signing anything with Britain on itself? On AGOA, is it in the best interest of South Africa to favor the EU, like the SACU Economic Partnership Agreement, over the world's biggest economy, like the U.S., AGOA? maybe working towards a full-time agreement with AGOA. I think we must, the nature of our economic decisions must be based on South Africans and South Africa itself. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Yesterhuizen. Can we turn to yourself then, DDG? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. With regards to SACU, and I'll cover both the questions by Honourable Mark Pearson and Honourable Mantashe. The revenue sharing arrangement is just but one of the components of our overall engagement with SACU. The SACU countries are quite important to South Africa's trade agenda. In fact, Botswana, Namibia are in the top 10 trading partners for South Africa globally. That's how important those markets are. Of course, we do have concerns with the revenue sharing arrangement, and the review will look at that. What the review will try and do is to ensure that we move SACU away from, which is an issue that we've raised for some time, that what we have is a revenue sharing arrangement and a common external tariff. That is really what has defined SACU thus far. So there's a need to address that, to ensure that we enhance cooperation, especially on industrial development, because what you also don't want, and we have seen it, is the fact that because the biggest component of the revenue sharing formula is customs revenue. And customs revenue by its nature is volatile. So which means that when the global economy is not performing well or our economies are not performing well, there's a sharp drop in customs revenue, and then the BLNS countries will then experience deficits, which is unsustainable. So it's something that we need to address. Hence, as part of the issues to be considered under the review, is to look at the establishment of a stabilization fund, which will look at what do we do as SACU in the case where we are collecting as revenue more than we had planned for. What do we do to that revenue so that we can cushion ourselves in the times when there's a deficit or we're collecting less as is happening currently. So the aim is not to say there's no relevance to SACU, because if we look at the totality of issues, SACU still remains very much relevant to South Africa. In fact, all of the SACU countries import more from South Africa than we import. So we have a huge and growing trade surplus with those countries, which is also something that is not sustainable, because for trade to be mutually beneficial, it means that they must be able to produce more to trade with us. So the agenda that we're embarking on under the review is to ensure that there is sustainable development in the SACU countries, and we can address, of course, also the concern around the revenue sharing arrangement, with the aim of ensuring that the money that we collect through the common revenue pool contributes to industrial development in SACU, contributes to the creation of cross-border projects. So that is the ultimate aim in terms of the review. In terms of the time frame, we're looking at a two-year period to review the agreement. That is an indicative period, because the issues are quite technical that need to be looked at, but also there's a lot of stake for all the countries. So to find the middle ground is something that is going to be the challenge. But there's a two-year indicative period. The heads of states approved the review in June 2017. So we're looking at an indicative period of 2 years until June 2019 to conclude the review. But of course, as to whether we meet that time frame will depend on the dynamics in the negotiation process. Then when it comes to SADC, the rules of origin that we have is the double stage transformation. The issues that Honorable Mark Pearson raises are quite issues that we are aware of and of concern, but it mainly requires enforcement rather than the issues in the trade agreement themselves, because the trade agreement as it stands allows for, as I said, a double stage transformation, which means that for Mauritius to be able to get preferential access, or any other country in SADC, for example, needs to go through two stages. So it must be a textile, fabric, then processing, then you are able to access the market. So if there are loopholes, the loopholes are more in enforcement than with the trade agreement. So it's issues that have been discussed with SARS. The chief directorate that is responsible for clothing and textile in the DTI, the chief director is Abisha, is working very closely with SARS to ensure that we have enforcement of the trade agreement. So hopefully those issues can be dealt with in that way. But I must say that there has been a call in SADC to review the double stage transformation, because the other member states feel that because of limited capacities, they are not able to take advantage of the bigger SADC market. So there is a process to look at the review, but what has been agreed is that whatever review we're talking about when it comes to rules of origin, those rules of origin must support regional industrial development. So ultimately, we'll ensure that we don't come up with weaker rules that will allow for third parties to take advantage of the market, and that the SADC protocol must really give benefits to the parties there too. Then when it comes to Brexit, and I will cover both the question by Honorable McPherson as well as Stacey then, in terms of Brexit, as you said, the UK is not able to negotiate a new trade arrangement, but it can have a discussion or dialogue with countries with which it has trade arrangements. And the plan would be to look at a rollover. So already the discussion that we are having with the UK is to ensure that we preserve the current levels of trade that we have with the UK, and we come up with a post-Brexit arrangement that will be implemented day one after the UK leaves the EU. So what it means is that, yes, as I said, it's a rollover, but a rollover does not mean we just change EU to UK. There are issues that will need to be negotiated, and that is the process that we're currently busy with. So that process has started. So we had the first round of discussions with the UK in October, and we are expected to have another round in November, before the end of this year. Then we'll have another round in January, another round in February, with the aim of concluding the post-Brexit arrangement by March 2018. So that's the deadline that we've set for ourselves. And we've set March 2018, which is a year before the UK officially leaves the EU, so that between March 2018 and March 2019, we can go through the normal ratification processes, so that by the time the UK leaves in March 2019, we can say we have an arrangement. That will be the basis for our trade. So that will be the transitional arrangement. Of course, the UK or even South Africa and SADC may identify areas where we need to improve the access. Because the UK will now have its own trade policy. It may not be sensitive to some of the issues that the EU is sensitive to now currently. So there may be an opportunity to improve the market access. But the improvement cannot happen now because the UK is bound by the EU prescripts that it cannot negotiate a new arrangement. So any new and better access can be negotiated once the UK leaves the EU and is in a position to negotiate. But what will happen would be this transitional arrangement, which will basically be about rolling over the EPA. Then when it comes to the capacity of trade negotiators, we have a very capable team in the DTI to negotiate trade agreements. And this expertise has been acquired over a number of years. So we're able to advance our own positions. And I must also say that the positions and the mandate that the negotiators get is based on thorough consultations through NEDLEC, where there are constituencies, business, labor, and the community participate to then give us a mandate that becomes the basis upon which we negotiate. So there's a thorough consultation process. And throughout the negotiations, there are regular briefings to NEDLEC to say this is where we are, these are the dynamics in the negotiations, what should be the offensive interest, what should be the defensive interest. So all of those discussions inform the positions that are taken. So that is specifically with regards to trade agreements. But the issue that Honorable Biane is raising is with regards to cooperation agreements. For example, if there's a specific project that we want to negotiate, whether with China or any other party, those cooperation agreements are not necessarily led by the trade negotiators. They are led by specific officials that have expertise in a specific field. For example, if we want to discuss with, say, the U.S. or China an investment on autos, then you will have our experts from the Industrial Development Division of the DTI. We will have our experts from Invest South Africa that will come together to look at what is it that we need to do as South Africa and what will be the best deal for South Africa. So even with those cooperation arrangements, there are consultations with the specific sectors and specific stakeholders to ensure that we safeguard the interests of South Africa. So I hope I've resolved or answered the question. Then the question from Honorable Mantashe related to, and then the approach to tariff setting. Mainly because the critical issue with the ITEP process is to safeguard the integrity of the process and to ensure that it is not, and for a lack of a better word, not prone to political interference. So most of the requests are from industry and it's subjected to the due process of investigation, allowing all interested parties, whether in South Africa or out of South Africa, both importers and exporters, can influence that process, make the necessary submissions, and then the minister will then, on the basis of that, make a recommendation. And the minister, in terms of the ITER Act, has also a limited role in that he can accept the recommendation from ITEC. If he rejects it, he cannot change the recommendation of ITEC because it has to be subjected to a transparent and open process. What the minister would do is to refer the investigation or the recommendation back to ITEC for a specific recommendation or for them to look at specific issues, which will then be subjected again to another transparent process. So that is the case-by-case and evidence-based process that is put there. But of course, there are cases where for public interest, specific issues will be referred to ITEC to investigate. But it is a proper, transparent, and investigation process.
Interrupt. DDG, you've got a minute left, actually.
Thank you. Then the last question relates to the ability of business to take advantage of market access. I think we can do better to take advantage of the market access opportunities that we negotiate. And we have started a process as the DTI to engage actively with the export councils to give exposure to the market access opportunities. We are also in the process of developing the exporter's guide so that for each agreement, a trader would have quick and easy access information
where they can check what are the opportunities in each of the agreements, because I guess by their nature, trade agreements are bulky, so it's difficult if you have not participated in the process to understand what is provided for. So those exporters' guide will then assist to ensure that we have accessible information to our traders. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you, DDG. I have a few questions myself. I've asked for them to be noted because you may wish to make a broad comment and then respond in writing to us because we need to close in 5 minutes, all right? Honourable Montash?
Can the DDG also explain to us how long will they take to make those guidelines available? And again, how are they cushioning South Africa looking at the fourth industrial revolution in as far as job losses are concerned?
All right, don't respond this minute. Respond when I've raised these points. I want to go back to regional integration. I think that's on page 7, is it? Economic integration. Moving on to page 9. You will see on page 9, there, slide 9, Trade and Services Protocol, which was concluded 2012. Currently, negotiations are underway to liberalize trade in 6 service sectors. Can we get the names of those sectors right? And then on page 17, I think it is, we move to page 17. That is improvement on the TDCA text provisions. We'd like to congratulate the department on succeeding there. We know that has been a very strong struggle and we want you to continue there. We would like explained, though, on page 17 in writing, as I said, bilateral safeguard provision, which will continue to apply indefinitely on all products to liberalization. And then on page 19, EPA benefits for South Africa. You speak about exports of flowers. I mean, I wish this had happened earlier. I was going to start a flower farm myself. Now, the thing is that improved access for our exports of flowers. And Ethiopia, you said, just about its whole GDP is now on flowers. So we want what is it looking like? Where does the expansion come from, where to where, as well as the fruit issue that's always been somewhat of a problem? Then page 24, USSA bilateral trade. Several questions were asked by the committee on this particular area, but I think it's a concern to the committee. We've got all of these tariff lines, and we're only utilizing 20%. I want to know exactly which lines we're using and which lines we're not using. There's 1,835, and we're utilizing 141. It's actually 8%. Can we get an explanation in writing as to why the department thinks this is the case? And the same for sub-Saharan Africa, the 20% there. And then finally, I think it is on page 26, eligibility criteria for AGOA. Well, I'm surprised they haven't thought of redoing this yet, but it is a concern because this, it sounds like from what you said, this could be withdrawn at a moment's notice because it's a unilateral, isn't it? They're offering us a gift and, well, we're taking our gift back. So let's get a little bit more on that one, and then I think it is the final one on page 29, takeaways from the 16th AGOA Forum. You stated yourself, and it's linked to the other question, that this remains risky. We do need to spell out to the USA and President Trump, we create more jobs in his country than any other trade agreement. Right, thank you. So just to point that out, Jim, before anything else is withdrawn from this country. So I would like to thank you on that note, DDG, and also for your outstanding workshop which you organized the other day for those, on the WTO. Thank you very much. I wish we had more time. Everyone here wishes we had more time. And we are going to, aren't we, Mr. Honorable Esther Hazen? We're going to carve out space in 2018. I hope that's correct. A day away on some wine farm. Anyway, thank you very, very much for being here and all the committee members. We are meeting in here with the Joint Committee on Finance. But I am now going to adjourn and hope everyone has received the new program, because our next meeting is next Wednesday. Why next Wednesday and not Tuesday?
There's a sitting, Chief.
No, I want the next
There's a sitting.
It's because there is a sitting. It's beyond our control. A decision taken above us. All right. Meeting adjourned. Not until next Tuesday, until next Wednesday. Thank you.